Presley.
That's right. It is time for another episode of The Cultural Hall. This is episode 55.
It's, all right.
Me, your host, Richie T, with...
Rob. I'm just here for the intro, just to hang out and say hello.
Yeah, because I actually do this episode later by myself.
Oh, okay.
Myself and... I can't remember if they want to remain anonymous, so let's just leave it alone.
Yeah.
And say, coming up in the second and third block, we're going to talk about substance abuse and suicide.
Have you been affected personally by that, like with a family?
With substance abuse?
Or suicide or anything like that?
Is there anyone that I know real close and personal that has committed suicide? No, not off the top of my head.
Yeah.
And yourself?
I mean, I've experienced it, but nobody like really close.
Like we both had a mutual friend from college.
Yes.
But that's about as close as it's gotten for me.
Yeah, for me too.
So that's, you know, two or three times removed, I guess.
Yeah.
Not a brother or sister, not a, you know, extended family, but...
But yeah, this is something that's pretty real, you know, and it's probably good to talk about it, and probably this would be a good thing for people that are being affected by it.
Yeah,
right?
I feel... Well, I don't want to blow it. It's a great episode for people, so make sure you stick around for the second and third block. I want to make some comments based on last week's episode.
Okay.
Just some feedback that I have received.
For the Richie T episode.
Exactly.
And I was wondering about that. I was going to ask you what kind of feedback you got about that.
Well, the first one, this was an email. Someone went to theculturalhallpodcast.com, theculturalhall.com, went to contact us and sent this message. Wow. TMI, Richie.
Yeah.
Just kidding. I just want to give you a hug. A long, awkward hug, like Rob mentioned.
Yeah, you give long, awkward hugs.
Says, as I think back to the days when we shared hours of long road trips, this is a kid who I went to college with. He was in Acclamation, the performing group at Southern Utah University with.
Oh, okay.
Tyson is his name.
He's like, I didn't realize you. Anyway.
I didn't know you were going to share this.
Jeez.
He says, as I think back to the days when we shared long hours of long road trips and sleepless nights with host families, I realized that I didn't fully understand what it was that you faced back then. I am sure that I was judgmental, and for that I apologize. But listening to your story, wow.
Mm-hmm.
What an example of what not to do. Just kidding. I know some people will probably not appreciate that you were so honest and open about the dark times, but I think it goes to show the power of personal testimony and also the power of the atonement. After all, we all are sinners. Thanks for sharing, and it was nice to learn more about you. I listen to several podcasts throughout the week, and The Cultural Hall is always my first pick, and no, it's not just because I know you. It's mostly because of your awesome co-hosts and guests. So, from going from a compliment to thanks to you to not thanks to you at all, but thanks to the other people that you have on the show. That's how I took that. Thanks, Tyson.
That's funny. Well, the thing about
Hold on. He says, okay. Keep doing what you guys are doing, and we'll be saving a seat for you guys down in Southern Utah.
After listening to that email, makes me think, if we, when we break down these walls, these barriers, people kind of, we're more relatable to our listeners. People
sure.
think, you know what, I'm like Richie T. I've been on a different path, and I think that kind of brings us more closer to our listeners. And we're not all perfect, and we all have our faults, and we're
not
working on it.
Not all of us are perfect anyway.
Yeah, I'm not perfect.
Oh.
I'm not. I wasn't saying that.
No. I was saying I was.
Oh, you were perfect. Now you're perfect.
Darn near.
Oh, wow.
Pretty near.
All right.
Yeah. I'm not really.
All right.
I mean, in some cases, sure.
Right.
In some instances.
You probably
like
got...
My effort, 100% perfect.
There you go.
Really?
110%.
I feel like I give it my all.
Yeah.
Oh, I screw up all the time.
Yeah.
And when I think it's like, oh, yeah, that's what I was supposed to do, and it ends up not being what I was supposed to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. But my effort... I'm all out. Perfect.
And then you get people who are like, man, I'm not that bad. I'm glad my life's not that screwed up.
Right.
And then there's some people who are like, yeah, I'm right there with you. So.
Yeah. Woo.
But no, I think it was a good episode.
It was fun, and it was, my wife still hasn't listened to it yet.
How did you feel afterwards? What were your feelings?
I thought we would get into some more stuff that we didn't get into.
Like
and,
what?
And I don't know.
We
I
can just get felt into like it right now.
I mean, there was a lot of, like, mission stories. I don't know.
People wanted to hear more about mission stories.
Yeah.
We just got... We went a lot on your personal...
On the excommunication, which I never talked about before.
Your spiritual journey, those type of things. Yeah.
Maybe we'll do it again in the future.
Or we can just do an episode where we talk about our missions.
Yeah. Mission experiences?
Yes. The Culture Hall mission.
Is there anyone else that's been on a mission? Kyle. Did Kyle, Brother Kyle, go on a mission?
I don't know.
Brittany? No.
No.
Brianne?
No.
Ashley?
We can get Britt on.
Yeah, Britt, who blogs for us at theculturalhall.com. Yeah. He'd be interesting.
Yeah, yeah. He'd be fun. So we can get back Richard Dutcher, get some more stories about Mexico.
Yeah, there we go. Kurt Bester, more stories about not having to wear clothes.
Pros.
Proselyting clothes.
That was awesome.
You just called it pros.
Yeah, yeah, pros, you know. Yeah, that's the word
we use.
That's
the lingo. Hey, deep six your name tag. That's what we always used to call it when you took your name tag off and put it in your pocket.
Exactly.
Hey, deep six it.
We're really teasing these other episodes. If you haven't listened to the Kurt Bester one, it's one of my favorite.
That's Rob.
That's me. It's one of my favorite.
Rob recommended. Richie approved.
Richie approved. It was just you and Kurt.
Was it just me and Kurt?
Yes. And I was kind of sad I couldn't be there. He's a family friend, you know.
Oh, well, I know. I noticed that on Facebook. Hey, if you go to theculturalhall.com, that's how you can get episodes all the way back to the beginning. If you subscribe to us on iTunes, I think it just gives you the last 50 episodes. Is that right? Or does it get you all the way back to the beginning?
I don't know.
Yeah. And then also, if you go to iTunes, give us a little plug. Give us a little review. If you wouldn't mind.
So here's something. We always talk about doing something and we never do it.
Like what?
I think it would be fun if we created a store and you can get a button. I am a lifer.
Sure.
Or
I'm working on
Born in the Culture Hall. BITCH.
Sure.
Right.
And it's just an acronym and people go, huh? What? Wait, what? I'm working on a t-shirt.
Great.
Actually.
Okay.
I want to do one that just says, we'll be saving a seat for you.
That's good.
Simple, right?
I like that. And we should have a lonely pew.
Yeah.
Just a pew by itself.
I love it.
P-E-W.
And then I also want to do P-U-G-H, right? No? Different kind of pew?
I think so.
Then I also want to do one. This is an idea that I've had for a long time. One that says, ginger power keeps me safe from sin.
Okay.
A little play on the word scripture power keeps me safe from sin.
Yeah, we should find how many... Oh, you being the ginger, right?
No, okay. No. Not me being the ginger. Just gingers in general.
So how many gingers do we have in our demographic? Like 10?
Well, statistically speaking...
Let's bring that up.
Of our Facebook fans, mm-hmm. We probably have about 140 gingers.
All right. You're just making that up.
No, because isn't about 10% of the population redhead?
Sure.
Okay, I'll take it.
I don't know.
So if we have 1,400 Facebook friends, 10%
and then 1,400 of them would be gay?
Of what?
14? I don't know if it's just 10%.
140 of them would be gay. Yeah, yes. If you go statistically, there are 140 gay redheads listening to this podcast right now.
What? All right.
There's statistics. I got another email.
Okay, let's hear it.
About
the
episode.
Okay.
This is from Stephen.
Okay.
Is his name?
Okay.
Says, by the way, I enjoyed your podcast. It was interesting hearing about your excommunication. I'm going on almost 3.5 years now. Unlike you, I have no goal to go back. Mm. If I can't remain with my partner, it's not worth it to me. Mm. He says, but I totally related to your comments about how when you were excommunicated, you're faced with all sorts of things that you took for granted when you were a member. And I especially relate to your comment about being annoyed with those that take membership for granted. When people don't get up to bear their testimony or when someone jokingly complains about having to give a talk, I think to myself, you don't know how blessed you are to have that privilege. He goes on to say some things like, I knew this guy from the theater. He says, I remember our days at Desert Star with great fondness. I always hoped that you would find a woman that would make you happy, and I'm glad that you found your wife. I'm also glad to see great things that you are doing and wish you much success and hope that you achieve all your dreams. Thanks for sharing so much of your intimate parts of your life.
Intimate parts.
Yeah. Mm. I didn't show anyone my intimate parts.
Okay, that's good.
I thought about it, but I thought maybe that would be just too much.
We'll leave that for the honeymoon.
Yeah. I'm married, you know that, right?
Oh, okay.
2 years this month. Can you believe that?
Congrats, I was at your wedding.
I know you DJ'd my wedding, but exactly. Can you believe that it's been 2 years?
No, it's crazy.
Does it seem like it's been it or no?
Actually, it does.
Does it?
Yeah.
Sometimes for me, too. Sometimes it seems like 10 years.
Any more?
As far as feedback, no. There was one, I think, on the website, theculturalhall.com, but I don't have that pulled up. Give me a second, I can do it. What did you think of it? Was I too much? Did I say too much? I haven't said enough?
I was kind of... Yeah, I think, you know, we kind of relied, we talked too heavily about certain things more than others, but that's fine. I think.
Like what would you like to have talked more about?
What you actually did. No, just kidding.
I actually wanted details about the different occurrences that led to your excommunication. No, seriously.
I wanted names. I guess.
I wanted the list.
I don't know. I think it would have been fun to kind of go through, like, you know, your high school years and then your mission years and stuff like that. That would have been fun just to kind of hear those stories. I thought it was interesting, your persecution for just sending a guy a flower on accident.
Right.
I mean, that is ridiculous.
It wasn't an accident. It was a full-on joke.
It was a full-on joke, right.
But yeah, still, the persecution behind it.
Yeah.
It's what molds and shapes you. I think everyone should be persecuted for being wrongly assigned homosexual.
Right.
It's character building.
And some of my favorite stories are some of these girls that you've been with. You know, the crazy stories and...
Yeah, I kind of wish I would have gotten into one or two of those.
Yeah.
But I didn't know how it...
Yeah.
You know, like for example, a funny story that I would have liked to share. Let me make sure we got enough time before we get into the rest of this episode. Yeah. I'll tell you just briefly. And then I'll share the story in the future.
Okay.
I went to a mission reunion.
Yes.
With a sister from my mission.
Yes.
And then after the mission reunion, she's like, I got to go get drunk. I feel terrible.
She feels terrible.
Yeah. Because, like, she was at the mission reunion and her life wasn't where she wanted it to be.
Oh,
so she's like, let's go drinking. And I'm like, I don't drink. She's like, I don't care. I need someone to drive me.
So, oh, that's fun.
Right?
Yeah, that's really interesting.
So, that's just one of the stories I could have told, I guess.
And did you make out with her afterwards?
No, I didn't.
Okay.
In fact, one of the most infamous Richie T dating stories occurred that night, but not with that girl, with somebody else.
You met somebody else at the mission reunion?
No. It was
at the bar?
It was a phone call that occurred after I left the bar.
Oh.
That was one of the most interesting stories. Is that a tease? You bet. I'll tell that one in some upcoming episode. Don't let me forget.
Okay.
But right now, second and third block, it's certainly not a I don't know. We didn't do a very good job of introducing something a lot more serious, but we're going to be talking about suicide and substance abuse here in the second and third block of the Cultural Hall. Hey, it's me, Richie T. Want to take a second and tell you about my buddy Dylan over at Lennon Design. Go to LennonDesign.com to see some of the stuff that he's done. Or, you know what, better yet, go to theculturalhall.com and look at all the graphic stuff that we have there at that website. You know who's done that? Dylan at Lennon Design. He's offering a special deal for people in the Cultural Hall, a 10% discount. You know why it's 10%, right? And all you have to do is just give him a call, 801-699-3022. Any sort of graphic artwork or website design that you might need, give him a call. Think about Lennon Design. You know, they sponsor your favorite podcast. All right, it's the second block here of the Cultural Hall, and joining me is three people. And I think I want to tell the story of how this kind of came about before we get into what we're going to talk about. I'll introduce the people here real quick. I'm joined by Rick and Cammy and Monique. And that's right? I didn't mess that up. Okay. Okay, good. Good so far. How this whole episode came about is where we record in Murray, Utah. We're in the bottom of a dentist's office, which is kind of a random place to be. We've told you about how we got this space to record in. And one time we were recording, and I think it was me and Ashley, the blonde, Garby, her and I were in here doing it, and Cammy kind of comes poking her head in.
Well, and said, let me correct you.
Oh, please.
I heard Richie talking about farts.
Oh.
And I said, what?
and then pokes her head in. Yeah, we could have omitted that part. But that's fine. And so we kind of said, you know, this is what we do. We're a podcast. We talk about, you know, everything, every part of Mormonism. And then said, hey, you know what? You should find our Facebook page. And I tell you this because if you haven't found our Facebook page yet, I would encourage you, as you're listening, go to Facebook and find the Cultural Hall and like us. And then you can follow the conversation that we have there. And she did so. And then we came back and I was like, oh, you know, I should poke my head in and talk to her again. Just say, hey, you know, and see if she's listened to it and see if she likes it or anything like that. And the conversation came about that she's like, you know, hey, you know what? My family and I might be an interesting kind of subject for the podcast. And to be, you know, completely candid is something that I've always been on here is I was like, oh, great. Because a lot of times people are always like, oh, hey, here's something that's really interesting. And then they begin to tell me a story that is about the most unfascinating story that is not ever anything that I could, you know, use for this podcast or, you know, for my day job or anything like that. And so it's hard to be like, well, that's a great idea, but...
thanks, but no.
But yeah, thank you, but no, thank you. but Cammy, what she talked about was something... It's definitely very serious, so I want to make sure that I'm not coming across a lighthearted, but was something that I thought, you know, we haven't talked about it yet here on the podcast, and so I wanted to get her in, and then she's like, you know what, I think my family might be able to come in and talk about it as well, and to not keep you in suspense anymore about it, about what it is, we're going to talk a little bit about suicide today, and substance abuse as well, and how that affects a family, and how it kind of comes into the gospel. But I hope that you guys don't mind that I do this. I wanted to give people an idea of who it was that we're talking about. And it's so Rick, this is your son, and then Cammy and Monique, this is your brother. And I did a quick search and found his obituary online. So I'm just going to read a portion of that to give people kind of an introduction to him. It says, Tanner Rick Adams, our son, brother, uncle, teammate, and friend, passed away February 9th, 2012. With loving adoration, we cherish all of our happy memories with him. It was only fitting that the boy who was born on Valentine's Day grew up to be a kid with a humongous heart. Tanner's incredible capacity to love was extended not only to family and friends, but also to children, strangers in need, and animals. Tanner was a competitive athlete who never met a sport that he didn't like. He was tall, strong, and an intimidating force. Tanner was intelligent, hilarious, witty, insightful, and gave the best bear hugs. He loved reading, music, movies, comfy slippers, Duke basketball, South Carolina golf trips with his dad, A1 steak sauce, and spending time with his family and friends. He loved Natalie, who found a place in his heart that hadn't been touched before. He cherished his four nieces and nephews, spent countless hours wrestling, teasing, having tea parties, and pillow fights. He filled our home with our lives with laughter, adventure, and a little bit of mischief. Tanner was loved and was loved by two amazing sisters who throughout his life he leaned on for strength, comfort, joy, and guidance. His parents treasure every minute of every day of his journey, and they find comfort in knowing that we will feel his strong arms wrapped around us again. To the moon.
To the moon.
So just because I'm curious, what's the to the moon part about?
You know, it started from a book. Mm-hmm. You know, like this little bunny says to the big bunny, I love you all the way, you know, to the
moon. Oh, I've heard that reference before.
Yeah. And so at the end, the big bunny says, well, I love you to the moon and back. And so just in our family, we've just kind of coined that phrase. You know, we're not real sappy. We're pretty sarcastic. And so that was an easy way for us to be like, I love you,
you know,
to the moon. Yeah.
Cool. So let's talk about it. Who wants to tell kind of the story of how kind of everything began? Who's Monique? Are you up for it? We'll go till you can't. Keep composing that.
You know, it's just funny because all of us kind of have a different perspective. We've all seen a different part of this journey, and I feel bad that my mom's not here because she's the one who really was. I mean, she lived every part of it, mm-hmm. you know, and she just didn't feel like she was ready. You know. So
yeah, I mean, as I read, it was February of this year. So yeah, we're
6 months.
Yeah, 6 months ago.
You know, so a couple of years ago, I mean, you just had to know Tanner. Anybody who knows Tanner, I mean, he was just this hilarious, I mean, one-liners like that. He could quote a movie. He could quote a song. You know, we're just a really close family, just genuinely, genuinely enjoyed being together, you know, just really mm-hmm. good friends. And I just loved when we were all together because it just brought out the best in me. You know, my husband would always be like, oh, I just kind of feel like an outsider because you three just all really like each other, you know, and just... But Tanner, we realized a couple years ago, had been struggling with some substance abuse, you know, and as a family, well, at least as sisters, you know, we were just like, we're just going to be accepting and non-judgmental and try as hard as we can to just let him know that we love him. We're just going to love him through it, mm-hmm. you know, like if he chooses a different path than, you know, the church or whatever, then we're just really going to let him know that we don't want to lose him. We want him to be here.
How did you come to find out?
How did we? You know, it was kind of a gradual thing, you know, found out, oh, he'd been drinking and I don't think that it came to a head until we realized that that he was really struggling with depression as well.
Okay.
And I think there was a suicide attempt that kind of brought it to our attention. You know, I think the first one was an overdose. Was he? Anyway, this just, I mean, it sounds muddled, but it just... you know, as we kind of followed him on this journey, I think his addictions were way more serious than we ever thought, mm-hmm. Especially alcohol. Alcohol was his substance of choice. We tried. He did a stint in rehab. You know,
what kind of rehab is available? Because I think that a lot of people probably listening, and certainly myself, like I've kind of known people that I've known, you know, certainly, you know, come off as addicted. But I don't know anything more about it. I don't know if they've how they go about, you know, doing anything about it. I know the church has some programs that they've really started to emphasize, especially with pornography,
right.
But also with other addictions. But I mean, how?
And the church does have programs, right?
Right. We, I mean, it's really difficult to find the right spot for your child. Mm-hmm. Of course, we wanted something that was LDS based, sure. Which may have been. good and may have been bad. From my perspective, as Father's perspective, is it as we go on, the church sometimes produces a lot of shame and guilt. And that's increased as kids, both male and female, work through their own little issues. Backing up to Tanner's story, and then we'll get back to finding the program. My father and my wife's father were both alcoholics.
I was going to ask if it was something.
We preached, don't even get close to it. I have two older brother and a younger brother who are both addicts. And so
to alcohol as well, or other substances?
Other substances, okay, as well. So we have an addicted personality, a family. Some people say it comes in the genes, and I think it does. So we preach that.
Is it something that you have ever struggled with, any sort of addiction?
No. I tried it, but I decided it wasn't for me.
Okay.
So we preached it and preached it and preached it and preached it, and it was interesting when Tanner took his first drink. And I've always coined the phrase, you never do drugs or the first drink by yourself. Mm-hmm. You're always with somebody else. So that's how important friends are, because you're always with somebody else.
Sure.
So he just told us, he goes, Mom and Dad, you know, that first time that I took that drink, it was just like, wow. It was the most euphoric thing that I've ever had, because it got me out of the pain that I was in. And we had no idea he was in pain. We thought we were the best of family. We thought... Then we were chasing the sports dreams. We were chasing everything that we thought family should do.
What were the sports dreams?
Well, he was gifted athletically, from little league football to basketball to...
just anything.
He was an all-state baseball player, basketball player in high school. I mean, he was just a gifted athlete. Mm-hmm. And so with that, of course, we all lived the dream of, oh, that college scholarship. So we were chasing the college scholarship dream, which actually came to fruition. And then... From a father's perspective, you know, I thought I managed the system pretty well to get him to where we thought we were. But as we managed the system, all it did was really produce more guilt and more shame. And so...
What was the guilt and shame about?
Well, because he was living a double standard. Mm. I mean, we were trying to live the gospel, and we're still trying to, we were trying to help him decide about a mission. Okay. I mean, a mission is just the greatest thing for young men. But there's a lot of young men that don't go, and how do we help them? Mm-hmm. And that's the guilt and shame part.
Sure. And how do they deal with it?
How do they deal with it?
I think within the church there's a lot of people, if they don't go, it's like, you know, they always, you know, because I know from being in Elders Quorum's lessons, it's like, since we all served missions, and I am always like, we may want to be a little bit more sensitive to people who maybe didn't serve missions, or since we all know, I don't think everyone here kind of... I always, whenever I teach, I try and be sensitive to that. But yeah, there's a lot of guilt that comes from it.
I mean, that's real in our culture. And so from that point on, we just didn't really understand how much pain, internal pain, he was in, because he was always happy around us. He was always happy around his sisters. He was always happy around people. And for the most part, people didn't have any idea of the pain that he was living in. Mm-hmm. So going back to choosing
what he was really struggling with was depression, right? That's like depression, we think, played a big part in it, mm-hmm. Which is why he turned to alcohol to try and help himself.
Yeah.
But obviously it was just
a mask.
It's just cruel, because alcohol damages like those very like centers in your brain that feel joy. So he would always be like, but I feel like I'm faking it. I feel like I don't really feel joy. So then he would turn to alcohol, which would damage. You know, it's just such a brutal, cruel cycle to get stuck in.
Let me ask you. Monique said that as sisters, they were like, we're just going to love him through this. What was your take on it?
Same.
Okay.
Same. Our family, we just love each other.
And mom, the same way, just said, all right, family, we're together no matter what the choice is. Okay. Yep.
You know, I think she had more difficult decisions. You know, my mom, I mean, just, it was crazy how her intuition, she would be like, Tanner's in trouble, you know, and like, super cape. Like, she knew when he was struggling. And even though he'd be like, no, Mom, I'm fine. Nothing's going on. I'm fine. I'm not doing anything. She knew. I think she knew before all of us knew. So I think she really carried that weight, trying not only to love him, but to help him get better. You know, as sisters, that wasn't our job. Mm-hmm. You know, we didn't have to do that. But I think there was friction between my mom and dad trying to figure out the best way to help their son, you know, and they both saw it differently.
So going back to the rehab where we started, I mean, sure. It's really difficult to try to find the right place. And they're very expensive. And so then all of a sudden money becomes an issue. How do we afford to pay for the substance abuse program? Will our insurance pay for it? Should we go LDS based? Should we? I mean, we looked into 10 or 12 different programs. Some were outsourced, some were in, some were out in the wilderness programs. All of those kind of things, trying to figure out what would help him the best.
How do you know? How do you know what would help him the best? I mean, because you hear about all the different programs. I wouldn't know the first thing. If my wife was like, hey, I'm addicted to something, I'd be like, well, first of all, I mean, like you guys, I'd probably be like, what? I thought, how, what? And then second, I'd be like, okay. Like, I don't, anyway, go ahead.
And that is the hard part, because you really don't know where to go. First of all, you've never been there before.
Sure.
You have no idea. So you talk to friends, you talk to other people. Everybody has a story. Everybody has an idea. And you just kind of try to find something that fits.
What was his involvement in it?
Well, basically what had happened in the last little while, because he was a basketball player, we would send him off to college, we'd get him all healed up and strengthened, and we thought, well, basketball will save him. So we'd send him off to school to play basketball, and then the next year he'd come back just broken again, just because of, I mean, he obviously abused alcohol and he abused some other drugs, and that was going on in the sporting community, of which, how can that be? But it's true. Mm-hmm. So he'd come home the summer, would get him fixed up again and send him off again. And so the cycle repeated itself three times. And finally it got to the point where we just said, you know,
he really needs help.
He needs help.
He wasn't even really functioning.
Right. And so at that point he agreed to go, just because he loved us, not that he really wanted to go. Mm-hmm. So we sent him to, you know, a program in South Jordan. And
what kind of program was this? I mean, what finally was it that was like, this feels right, or this is the right thing? Or,
well, I think from my perspective, it was LDS based.
Okay.
And we felt like the gospel of Jesus Christ could help him if he could kind of get rid of the shame and the guilt and get rid of all the baggage that he was carried and just start again. Obviously, substance abuse is something that masks other problems.
Sure.
The way I see it is the way you feel about yourself. Mm-hmm. You don't feel good about who you are, but you don't know how to fix it, and so
just lost.
You're just lost. Mm-hmm. And it's painful inside your head. He would always tell us how he always put music on, or he was always watching movies, so he didn't have to listen to his brain think, because it was just always just a jumble.
And he was that open about it. He would
absolutely
be, this is what's going on, and I feel darkness and everything like that.
At the end, that's the way. I mean, he was very, very open about what was going on. And so anyway, back to the programs. Whatever program you choose, my wife and I, Cindy, we were trying to get fixed too. Because most of the programs, they have some counseling on the side. And so we would go to all those counseling programs. We were trying to learn about addiction. And the church does have a terrific 12-step program that's just incredible for somebody who needs help. Mm-hmm. As we'd go to these 12-step programs, and they were for the parent, not for the addict, even though they have the program for the addicts, mm-hmm, as well, which are terrific too. But it kind of follows the lines of AA, the 12-step mm-hmm program in AA. And you'd just go and you'd share. And you wouldn't be able to crosstalk, but afterwards, after the meetings were over, you could get with the people there and you could talk about certain things. And that was just a terrific experience. And I would definitely tell somebody who's struggling with a son or daughter to go to that. It just...
What types of things do they teach you? I mean, I'm sure there's... To go into it, you'd be like, well, let's start here, and then 5 hours from now, we're still going.
Well, it's just a 12-step program.
So, like what are some of them?
I wish I could remember. I should have brought. I mean, one that I do remember is that it's not your fault, mm-hmm, that don't carry the guilt. I mean, it wasn't your choice. You have to take care of yourself. An addiction just destroys marriages because mothers...
Did you guys find that between the two of you really starting to be pretty intense?
Real intense. Until we started going to the 12-step, the LDS 12-step program. I mean, we went to AA two or three times just to see what that's at and talk about being an LDS person going to a, another church's excuse me, AA meeting. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a real eye-opener, you know, because we have this culture. But it was so terrific for us to go see what other people are doing. It's just not an isolated thing in our church.
And sure.
Everybody's trying to figure out addiction. So,
you know, but my frustration with all those meetings, a lot of the meetings, is oftentimes they are telling you what not to do or what you've done wrong or don't do this. Mm-hmm. But my frustration is they never come out and say, this is what you should do.
Right. So you're sitting there going, I really want to be doing something proactive. I really want to do this.
Okay, so I don't do this, but I do. You know, I have three little kids. And so watching, like, a lot of the backlash from Tanner's suicide has been insecurity being a mother. You know, like, how do I keep my three little kids from going through this? How do I keep them from these same pitfalls? You know, I know that it runs in my genes. I know that, you know, there's some susceptibility. How do I steer them away from this? And so, like, I hear, you know, my mom would come home and say, yeah, well, this time we learned that we shouldn't, you know, pile on the guilt, you know? And I'm like, the guilt is such a powerful parenting tool.
Yeah.
No, but just...
No, but it is.
Yeah, it can be. So I just have been waiting for somebody to say, well, this is what you should do. You know, it is so frustrating because, like, you go into the medical field and Tanner would see a counselor and he would try to talk to the counselor and the counselor would say, well, he really needs to get some medication for his depression. So then he'd have to go see a psychologist or a psychiatrist who can prescribe it. But mm-hmm. It's like nobody was ever really on the same page. You know, nobody would really, and it's not like they could tell my mom anything he said, even though she was paying for it, even though she was,
sure, because, you know, the confidentiality.
Yeah, and he's old enough. And so it was just like we could never really get to the heart of, you know, and to this day, I think it haunts us all that we treated the substance abuse more than we did the depression. You know, mm-hmm. They go hand in hand, but we spend a lot of time. My parents spent a lot of money going to rehab, trying to get him sober enough so we could treat the depression. And it just... You know what I mean? It just feels like nobody will work with you. It feels like hitting a lot of brick walls, you know, and just trying to fight for that person that you love because they're not really fighting for themselves, you know, and trying to figure out what is best because nobody will really help you. You know, you just navigate the best you can.
Coming up here in the third block, I want to talk about kind of the and this maybe get a little tender, the time... kind of leading up to the suicide and then immediately following everything with that. So it'll be coming back here in the third block.
Sidewinder Media was named as one of Utah's top photographers by In This Week magazine and is a winner of several awards for fine art, portrait, and event photography. Sidewinder Media has been professionally photographing everything from wildlife to headshots for over 10 years. Sidewinder Media has the experience and the knowledge to capture your special occasion or portrait the way you want it. They also film and edit music or product videos and do simple ads for Facebook or websites. Email them at sidewindermedia@gmail.com or call Rusty at 801-941-5500. 576 to book your shoot today.
All right, so you're going to the church-based kind of 12-step program, showing signs of success for him, beneficial for you guys, or
not a lot of success for him. Uh-huh. Very beneficial for my wife and I.
Okay.
We were able to, in reality, it prepared us for the end. I mean, there were many tender mercies that we learned along the way.
Like what?
Just like one counselor at the rehab said, you know, either they get better, they get worse, or they die. Mm-hmm. I mean, those are really the three choices that addicts have. And so that always stuck in my mind that, you know, death might become the ultimate answer. I mean, he may choose to die. Mm-hmm. And that's a harsh reality to come to as a parent that, you know, in rehab they teach you at some point they just have to be accountable for their own actions. And it's really hard to take your son or daughter and drop them off at the park and say, hey, you know, you got to make the right decision. But that's one of the things they teach you have to do. You have to...
use their agency?
Yeah. You can't force them to change. At some point, it gets so painful that they choose to change. And I think that's the answer Monique was looking for, is what do you do? And I don't know that there's an answer. The answer is... You change when you choose to change. Mm-hmm. But there are some symptoms. Depression is huge that just doesn't allow one to think correctly for themselves. And how do you get him clean enough to be able to think through that? I mean, we went up to Uni a number of times where he was in detox, and he would...
Uni is a hospital? Sorry, I don't know.
University of Utah psych unit, basically.
Okay.
And so we'd go up there, and they would detox him, and he would just be a mess. And after 4 or 5 days, he would be detoxed enough where he could really speak and talk. And he really wanted to change. He really wanted to do it different. But he just didn't have the skills to be able to do that. And I think that's what rehab kind of tries to teach them, is skills to be able to make right decisions. But sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't.
Do you feel like it was, I know sometimes people will talk about that it's essentially like the drug or the depression or, you know, in other cases has control over the person almost to the point where they're not the... It's not the individual making the choice anymore. Did it seem like it was that, or was it always Tanner making the choice?
Oh, I don't think he ever made the choice. In fact, even at the end, when he wrote us a letter at the time of his suicide, I mean, the choice that he made was one to help us as a family. I mean, he was always thinking about us as a family instead of himself. Instead of making the choice to fix himself, he was always worried about everybody else. Does that make sense?
So he thought by ending his life, he was actually sparing us from...
Having to...
Yeah.
He didn't think
that he could conquer his addictions. And so he said, I'm not going to put my family through this. You know, I'm not going to be that guy.
So how did that happen?
Well, he had actually been to rehab in St. George, his second rehab. And after rehab, they can choose to either go to like a...
Sober living,
or
is that like a house where you live with a bunch of people that are
correct,
living sober?
Pure addicts, okay. And they try to help each other through the process.
But I think that his depression really kind of overwhelmed him, and I don't think he was doing very well. So my parents went to go visit him around Christmas. I think my mom knew that things weren't right, and so they actually sent him to live with my aunt and uncle on a cattle ranch in Alamo, Nevada. Mm-hmm. Right? So like middle of nowhere, no cell service, nothing. And Tanner just seemed to be doing so well. You know, my uncle is just this hardened old stake president cattle rancher, but just loved Tanner. And they worked hard, and they, you know, and Tanner would send us pictures of him dressed in like Wranglers and a cowboy hat, mm-hmm. saying, I was meant for this. And, you know, so we thought he was doing really well. And, you know, as a family, we decided to pull back a little and see if giving him that space to get better was what he needed.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if it was really a decision we like made. It just kind of happened. I think all of us felt like, oh, he's doing better. We don't want to like smother him and, oh my gosh, good job. It was more like, all right, we'll take a step back and let him do his thing. It seems like he's doing well.
And so his birthday was coming up on Valentine's Day. Mm-hmm. I think that he had had a slip and had bought some alcohol. You know, and I think was feeling some guilt about that. He and his girlfriend had broken up, you know, under some really sad circumstances. And I think that his depression just finally got the better of him. And so we got the call on the morning of February 9th that, you know.
2:30.
In the morning.
Mm.
So my uncle had found him. And
so previous to that, though, he had tried to commit suicide 3 other times.
That we know of.
And in his letter, he just said, you know, I've always left myself an out, but this time I'm not going to. Hmm. So it's something that, you know, he had thought through in the sick mind that he had. And since our experience, there are so many out there that have had the same experience that we've had. And it is just ruthless. It is just so painful. But there are so many good people that have had, I mean, it's amazing how many people have come to comfort us when we didn't even know they were in pain themselves, where their own sons or daughters had done the same thing. And that's kind of what you get out of the rehab thing too, is you connect with people who are living the same hell that you're living. Mm-hmm. And so you're able to share experiences, but by no means are we the only ones out there suffering with this. And it's just a terrible thing to live with, of suicide.
What's the worst part about it for each of you?
I hate the judgment. You know, like they hear suicide and substance abuse, and instantly in their eyes you can see, oh,
drug
he
addict.
Was one of those.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I just want to be like, he was not. You know, it was not that. And in fact, my good friend's father just passed away. He had cancer. And so, of course,
he had cancer.
Like,
he was sick.
Oh, yeah, but I'm just saying.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, you don't do that to those.
So I was almost jealous. Like, oh, you know, like how lucky that they not only they don't have to deal with the stigma as mm-hmm. well as, because I think we are constantly, constantly fighting that battle of wanting people to remember for Tanner for more than just how his life ended, you mm-hmm. know, because he was incredible.
What about for you, Cammie? What's the hardest part about it?
I think I just miss him. Mm-hmm. I don't think that I have fully grasped what has happened and just understanding all of it. So I just miss him a lot right now.
We all just miss it.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Rick?
I just... You know, as this whole process is going on and you're thinking through he may die mm-hmm. and the pain that you're in as you fight this addiction thing, you think, and this is the first time I've ever said this out loud, you think maybe death would be easier mm-hmm. as you're fighting this battle that just seems so overwhelming, and it's not. When you're dead, there's no hope, but when you're alive, there's still hope. And I guess that's what I miss the most is there's no hope. He's dead. But when you're in the middle of that battle, that addiction, I mean, it is just so cruel. It just wipes you out just as you're trying to fight that battle.
Well, and you're looking at this person that you just adore, and he is making decisions that you know are so contrary to the person that he is, mm-hmm. you know, and you're just like, just stop doing that. What are you doing? You know, this is not the person. And so for him, it's like more guilt, more, oh.
No, you're right. I'm not the person. No. Why can't I That's be the right. person? Yeah. What, I can by no means relate to this.
You can't.
This situation.
I can tell you, you cannot.
You're lucky. We don't want you to.
And I bet that a lot of people, you know, I mean, I don't know you guys very well, but I'm a caring person who, you know, hearing this situation is just like, oh, my heart goes out. But what's the best thing that like that people have done for you guys, and what are things that, I mean, we talked about you know going to rehab and they tell you everything not to do.
Yeah,
give us some of those too, because I bet there are people that are like, you know, I know how you feel, and it's like, no, you don't know how.
Well, Cammie's poking me now because like I have this hatred for the word condolences. Like, is that the most empty, stupid word ever? Like, if you don't know what to say, you just say, we feel for you, you know, we loved you, we love Tanner, but condolences is empty. Mm-hmm. It's lame. Every time somebody wrote our deepest condolences, I was like, well, deepest doesn't make condolences any better mm-hmm. just because they're deep.
Yeah.
So that's my word of it. Don't say condolences.
Even though it's true, the one of the phrases that always just we have to laugh at is, oh, he's in a better place. Yeah. You know, one of you know, he people is. Are well-intended, and I do believe he's in a better place. I
we mean, know he is.
He's not living the hell that he lived here. So he is in a better place, but it's not that comforting.
No.
Somebody said to my mom, you must have been very strong in heaven to be able to do this. And I saw that look on her face like, she's going to knock them out. You know, they mean well. People mean well.
And you... That's what Cindy and I were trying to write down while we're going through this experience. Now, what are we going to do? What can we do when something like this happens to somebody else that we know? Mm-hmm. What can we do? And one of the things, in fact, one of my work associates' son just passed away of cancer. He's 13 years old. And what can we do? So one of the people brought over a cooler of soft drinks and water and just left them on our porch. And it was such a nice thought. I mean, who would ever think about bringing over
and somebody left eggs and milk?
Eggs and milk.
So we have to go to the grocery store.
And, you know, you're just parched because there's lots of people coming. And sure. what a nice thought. So we did that with my work associate. Took the cooler of drinks. And, you know, when you're getting them, you're thinking,
this is kind of an odd thing.
Kind of an odd
you're
thing.
Bringing me drinks.
But yeah. Afterwards, you realize, wow, that really was a gift of the heart of... Because you could really use it, and it's something you wouldn't normally think about. So sodas in a cooler is a great way to show your condolence.
not condolence.
Not condolence.
No. My favorite thing is my husband. I mean, poor guy. Not only is he losing a brother-in-law that he loved, but he's trying to help me,
sure.
you know, who is a mess, and trying to take care of our kids. But my very favorite thing that he did is he stuck one glow-in-the-dark star right above my bed. You know, mm-hmm. and so like it's 3 a.m. a couple days after Tanner died, and I look up there and it was like hazy, and I was like, is that really there? Like, mm-hmm. is there a glowing star above?
I must be really tired.
So I'm like waking up my husband, like, Jeff, is it, do you see that? You know, is that star really there? And so for me, I love that just because it was a simple thought. But every night before I go to sleep, it's like, okay, good night, Tan, you know, or, you know, and stars are actually a meaningful symbol for me. It's, you know, I kind of have always liked them and I think they're beautiful. And I mean, there's just a meaning behind it. But just that one simple thought, it wasn't expensive. It wasn't time consuming, mm-hmm. but it was sincere and it was meaningful. And I think that's the thing, you know, you just be sincere. No trite sayings, no saying what you think you're supposed to. You're sincere.
How's the gospel helped you guys make it through it?
I was going to tell you the story. So when we're living the hell, you don't know where he's at. He's not coming home. Is he at the park? I mean, I don't know how many times I went after him, trying to find him. I had one experience as I was going up to the park above our house where I was so angry at my father and Cindy's dad that I was yelling at him, saying, "Where are you guys when I need your help? Where are you guys?" I mean, I was just so angry at him because they created this thing. And I'm not putting the guilt on them either. I'm sure they had issues growing up as well. But sure. But this alcohol thing was all so consuming. I'm just screaming and yelling at them at the top of my lungs, "Where are you guys?" And their voice came and said, "There's a thing called free agency, and we all have it." Mm. And to me, that is the gospel, is that there is free agency. We all get to learn. We all get to teach each other. We all get to lift each other. And that's what the gospel of Jesus Christ is helping others, because that's what the Savior would do for us, free agency.
What about you, Cammie?
I think the gospel to me is just love. I just loved my brother, like no matter what he did, what choices he was making, just love and acceptance, just wherever you are in your life.
And I think that, you know, I'm like, there has to be more than just this. Like, it would be so lame if our whole point was like, "Oh, well, I drive a Ford Freestyle. What do you drive?" You know, like, it would be so stupid if this was what life was about. And mm-hmm. I know that it goes on after this. I know it has to. And like the connection that I felt with Tanner on Earth, I still feel, even though I miss him terribly, like I feel like if he was truly gone, if there was nothing left of Tanner, that would be broken. But I still feel him. And I still, you know, can hear him sometimes whispering in my thoughts. I know that he is close at hand. You know, I've had several dreams that are very real. I know that there is more. And I know that where he is now, he can work through his issues without that, like, suffering through the depression. You know, I don't think that he is exalted on high. I think that he is working through what he needs to work through, but it's without that, like, blanketing, suffocating blackness that was in his head.
What would you to other families, friends who have people that they love and care for going through this, what would be one thing that you'd tell them? To you guys, one thing that you would tell that person?
Unfortunately, we know too many people that are suffering the same drug addiction, it's just a horrible, horrible disease. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if there is one thing other than fight the fight. I mean, I'm serious when I said the 12-step program that's sponsored by the church saved us. Mm-hmm. I mean, there were lots of people there who were hurting, and they're still there, and they're still going, and they're still hurting. But it just gives you a chance to reflect on what the real purpose of life is. And each one of us have to make those decisions on our own. I mean, I can't make them for Tanner. I can't make them for you. We have to decide what's important to us individually. And we do that through prayer, through fasting, through communicating with our Heavenly Father who loves us all in a way that nobody else even understands, if only we could make ourselves have an opportunity to believe that. I mean, to have an experience with Him where you know and you don't doubt. And I mean, I've had those experiences through this living hell that I just don't doubt. Tanner is working through his problems. I'm working through my problems. And I can't wait for 6 more months to come by where we can go to the temple and do his temple work. Cool. And let him progress even further as he works through his issues. And that'll be a fun day. In fact, that's another thing that somebody brought over that was really interesting. That one of the men in our ward had made a cake. Mm-hmm. And he brought this cake over, and it was a delicious cake, and he'd put a temple on top. And if you knew this guy, you would think, really? But people would call, and he would call. He called us 5 or 6 times. We wouldn't answer the phone. Mm-hmm. You know, caller ID, we like that. Anyway, so he kept calling and calling and calling and calling. Finally, he just came to the door. And it was such a unique gift from him, where he had made this cake, cherry cake, with this temple on top, and said, in a year from now. And it was just one of those cool things.
What about for you, Cammie?
What's the question?
What's something that you would tell either family members or someone that's struggling through it, or like a one piece of advice?
I think just to be open and honest with each other. I think everyone tends to hide what they're going through, or think that maybe like someone else's family isn't struggling. You know, you don't need to tell everything, but I think it's great to know that someone else knows what you're going through, and that we're all just people like trying to make it, like every, you know, live life and be happy. So I think, you know, don't be afraid to share what you're going through.
You know, and my message would be to the youth, mm-hmm. like especially, like, you know, like if you make a mistake, it's not the end of the world. You just take care of it. You know, you talk to your parents, you talk to your bishop, and you move on. Because when you let the mistakes build up is when things really start to go bad. So you just take care of it. And doing hard things, that's how you learn who you are. You know, so don't be afraid to do the hard things, and don't be afraid to make mistakes, but you just take care of it.
At any time, have any of you guys, or your mom as well, your wife, any of you guys ever had anger, hostility towards the church, things like that, or towards God, where you're just like, what? I don't... Any feelings of that?
I don't think I have. I think our situation is unique, that there is a lot of like love and peace that has come at the end. Obviously, it was a struggle throughout, but I think there's a lot of love and peace. I haven't been angry so far. It might come later, I don't know. But
you know, I don't feel any anger or anything towards the church. You know, there are obviously idiots in the church that sometimes, sure, I want to smack. Some lady in Relief Society was like, when somebody dies, it is selfish of us to miss them. They are in a better place. And I just like, you know, but I understand what she was trying to say, but we just need to be careful about those blanket statements.
Sure.
You know, like, what would it say about us if we didn't miss him?
Right.
Well, he's gone. Oh, well. You know, I mean, we loved him. We loved him. So, of course, we're going to miss him. That's part of it. But no anger at the church.
Or towards God. Rick, any of those kind of feelings?
Absolutely not. I mean,
that's like the only thing that got us through it.
Yeah, the plan. I mean, if you didn't know the plan, that's what I feel for those people that don't understand the plan. How did they get through it? You know, how empty their lives must be when they lose somebody. But I'm so grateful for the plan that I know, and it's true. And I have faith that it's going to work. And everything is going to work out the way it's supposed to. It's hard.
Yeah.
But hard things are what make us grow. I mean, it stinks, but, you know, it's the reality of the fact we came here to learn to be like our Heavenly Father, and He gave His Son.
So let me ask you this. We ask a couple questions of everybody that comes in the cultural hall with us. What is your calling right now? We'll lighten it up a little bit.
I have the best calling ever. I am the ward librarian.
Yeah.
I plan on being the ward librarian for the next 15 years.
Perfect. Which reminds me, can I get some chalk and an eraser, please?
No, only if you sign it out. I'm just kidding.
I don't have one right now. I'm just smooth sailing through Relief Society sacraments.
Cindy and I work at the Utah State Prison.
Oh,
with
cool.
The women there.
Oh, really?
And the bishopric out there. And that's really been a learning experience, too, as probably 85% of the women that we work with have addiction and drug problems. And so you learn two things working at the prison: compassion, mm-hmm. and you just don't understand.
Right.
You just don't understand what some people's problems are. And you think you have problems? You come to the prison and hear problems that these poor women have been born into this life without a chance from the beginning. Not a chance from when they were babies, mm-hmm. to really progress. And it's so exciting to see them be taught the gospel and just get so excited about it. And they feel the Spirit. And in fact, the saying is you have to go to prison sometimes to find God. And right. In fact, they do. And it's just so exciting to see them grasp the gospel and its concepts. The unfortunate thing is they come back,
sure.
because their outside life just doesn't, they just don't know how to work through life yet. That's why they're in prison. But anyway, that's what we do.
What about if you could pick a calling?
You know, I love.
And you can even make one up. It doesn't have to be a real calling.
You know, I actually really liked teaching Relief Society. It was only once a month. And, you know, you ask the right question in Relief Society, and then those ladies will talk for an hour. Yeah. And you're done.
Okay.
I don't even know. I'm happy with anything.
Uh-oh.
I know.
You're doomed now.
Nursery. Nursery.
Yeah. No, I'm just kidding. Come on, there's got to be something.
You'd be good, like, with the young
An ideal, athletics. An ideal.
Athletics. Something in athletics. Volleyball coach.
There you go. What about you, Rick? If you could pick or invent one, what would you?
He's a great teacher.
Objection. Leading.
I'm just saying. He is. He's a good.
I guess my life has always been one of those where I'm always out after the one sheep instead of the 99. Mm-hmm. So I just like helping people. Just going out and trying to, I guess that's why the prison is such a good calling for us, is that, I mean, you're out there finding the one. And I just like finding the one.
Well, we appreciate you guys being here in the cultural hall with us. We hope that this podcast has nourished and strengthened your body, and that if you're not able to listen to the podcast this week, that you'll be able to listen to next week. And we will be saving a seat for you on the back row of the cultural hall.